Okay, welcome back, everybody, to 720 WGN. I'm Elise Glink. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm sitting in for John Williams today. John will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, I thought we would do a little bit of answering your questions, 312-981-7200. You can call or text with your finance questions this half hour. Since this is my usual slot on a Monday, I normally talk with John about what's going on in the markets, and so we'll do that. And then I thought we would talk about resolutions, New Year's resolutions. If you are buying a home, if you are selling a home, or if you just want to make some smarter moves with your money, we're going to do that as well. If you want to find me after the show, you can listen on Sunday mornings to This Week in Wealth. I host that with Tom Fortino. We talk about all kinds of things related to your money, retirement, and how you need to plan for that and regular streams of income. Something everybody wants, money falling from the sky. I wish I could make that happen for everybody. But we talk about that on This Week in Wealth. You can also sign up for my new newsletter, Love Money and Real Estate, at thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. All right, 312-981-7200 for questions about your money. But let's start at the top with home buyer resolutions, because one of the things with COVID, and you heard about this if you were listening last hour, we talked with Michael Lane, who's the general manager of Showing Time. They do reservations for listings and showings all, you know, across the country. We are short in the U.S. right now about 5.5 to 6.8 million housing units, according to the National Association of Realtors. And COVID has really been a trend accelerator. And by that, I mean, you know, COVID makes everything bigger, right? Everything in some ways more annoying, but it has put the gas on residential real estate in a way that we may have never seen before in this country. And that even goes back to 2006 and 2007 when, you know, home prices were escalating out of sight. And the shortage of housing units and homes for sale, I think I heard Steve Alexander say earlier this show or last show that literally there were almost no new homes sold below $200,000,
right,
this past year. Is that right, Steve? Did I get that number right?
Yeah, it's from the Commerce Department, right?
Mm-hmm. Crazy when you think about that. And so if you're buying a house, you're going to spend more. It's going to happen faster than you can ever possibly believe. And you're going to have to be ready with how much you can actually afford to spend and what you need to do. And so when I was constructing my annual home buyer resolution list, you know, number one thing is you got to know what you can afford to spend. And the problem that people are having more now than I think ever before, you know, in my experience of doing this column, is that people are seeing homes that look beautiful on Zillow, right? Zillow is getting 100 million eyeballs a month looking at homes for sale. And all those homes are beautiful. Many of them are way out of what your real price range can be. But when you take that kind of vision of what you think the home you want to buy looks like and you get low interest rates, it is super easy to get in way over your head financially. It's, you know, the lenders will let you borrow 4 and even 5 times your income. And it's so easy to just buy at the very top of that. And then you've got no backup, no fallback position in case something untoward happens. And so knowing what you can afford is super important. And interest rates are likely to go up next year. I know that people in the mortgage industry have been saying this now for 12 years, but the Fed has committed to, and I know this can always change, we all know this about the Fed, but they've committed to raising interest rates 3 times next year. When that starts to happen, homes are going to get much more unaffordable, even more unaffordable than they already are. And if you're buying, it's going to be a problem. So in my vision, there's 4 components of affordability. Like when you're thinking about what you can actually spend, number one is how much you've saved for a down payment, pretty important. Number two, how much your household earns. Number three, what debt you carry. And number four, your credit score. And I don't talk a lot about credit, but it is super important for anybody who is thinking about buying a house because it directly affects the interest rate of your loan, which has a multiplier effect on how much you can actually borrow. So if your credit score is, let's say, a 700, which is pretty good and about average right now in the U.S., 704, I think is the actual number, That's great, but that's not going to get you under 3%, which is where 30-year rates are right now. It's not going to get you that rate. It's going to get you a little bit higher, which means you'll be able to afford less. So number one is figuring out exactly what you can afford to spend. Hey, it's Elise Glink in for John Williams on the Wintrust Business Lunch. So glad you could join me today. John will be back tomorrow to finish out the year with you. You can always find me on my website, thinkglink.com. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter, Love, Money, and Real Estate. It comes out almost every week. This with the holiday season, I've been a little bit slower on that, but get the latest news, real estate news, and all the information you need about how to handle your relationships around money. That's Love, Money, and Real Estate. So we were talking about home buyer resolutions, and the first one is understand what you can afford. The second one is to get pre-approved for your mortgage. And there's a difference between getting pre-approved and just being pre-qualified. Pre-qualified is what you do for yourself. You can go onto any website and it'll tell you approximately how much you can afford to spend. But a pre-approval means your lender agrees to write it in writing to fund your loan, provided that the home you choose appraises out in value. So you get something called an approval letter in your hand, and that means that the lender has already taken into account your debt payments, your income, your credit score. And once you get this number, the amount they're going to lend you, you can add it to the amount that you have set aside for the down payment. So pre-approval will help you move a lot faster. And if you were listening last hour to how fast the markets are moving, they are going to contract in some places in less than a week. It is so fast. You're going to want to be pre-approved. And the other thing you're going to want to do is decide, if you want to buy this year, decide in advance what trade-offs you're willing to make. Because you may have, you know, looked at my book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask, and thought, okay, here's my wish list. Everything I want is everything I see on HGTV all the time. But you're not going to be able to afford all that. And even if you're daydreaming, zipping through Zillow, you need to make a second list, which is the reality check, everything you can't live without. And so understanding the trade-offs that you're willing to make, I think, is really, really important. And then the last thing I want you to resolve to do is to explore other ways to buy your first piece of real estate. Because for a lot of people, buying a first home, maybe you're not ready to do that. Maybe you can't afford to do it where you're thinking, but you do want to buy something. And I love that, because we know, you know, through research, that the younger you are when you buy your first home, the wealthier you'll be later in life. And so be creative. If you can't afford to buy a single family home in your neighborhood of choice, consider buying a 2 or 3 family unit building. We've got a load of them here in Chicago, where you live in one and you rent out the others. Consider buying with a friend or partner. And of course, if you're going to do that, be sure to sign a partnership agreement if you're unmarried. Build a multi-generational household that you're now allowed to leverage additional income. That's a growing trend that we're seeing. And so you might buy with a parent, and then you've got children and everybody lives together. We saw, again, COVID, the great trend accelerator, right? Pushing that trend out there as well. You may want to buy an investment property that you rent out to others while you're renting, and maybe you can move into it later, maybe not. I mean, maybe it's a small commercial building that you're going to buy instead. And then the last way to do this is to think about buying a home in a vacation area that you frequent. And the way that COVID is going, like, a lot of people have done this year. I've been amazed, except that they move into these vacation areas as their primary residence. And we've also seen this happen with rural communities. And so when people are, you know, out there and they're in, you know, rural America, the thing that really stops people is actually Wi-Fi. And so one of the things that you see that a lot is that people move out to these, you know, more rural areas, and then they don't get the kind of Wi-Fi and online that they're really used to. So those are some of the things that I'd like you to think through as you're thinking about buying this year in 2022. And especially on the affordability side, make sure you understand what your credit score is, and then understand what that's going to translate to into real estate. Because it's going to change this year if interest rates go up and your credit score doesn't go up as well. Now, for home sellers, boy, this is an amazing year for home sellers. And this is really what you want to be focused on, to maximize every last dollar you can. But the first thing you have to think about is, of course, figure out where you're going to live after you sell. Because if you're going to sell and go to contract in 6 days or 12 days, and you don't know where you're going to be moving, you're going to be renting. And so a lot of people have found that they've had to make a double move, which is more expensive, because they can't line up the buying and the selling on the same time and to close on the same day. So it's usually, this is kind of contrary to advice I normally give, but the market is so hot that you're going to really need to think about this ahead of time. And you may even, if you don't have enough cash to be able to put down on the new house, which you may have to buy first before you sell, you may want to think about a bridge loan, or you may want to think about taking out a home equity loan before you list your house so that you'll have cash available to move fast on the buy side. Or just resolve you're going to rent for a while and figure it out. You might want to, and this is another resolution, really deep clean your house. One of the things that bothers buyers more than anything is dirt. And I know that sounds silly because, yes, they're thinking about all the other stuff as well, but they really need a house to be sparkling clean. And again, that's the HGTV effect. That's all the houses they're seeing on Zillow. They're staged, they're beautiful, but first impressions are important. And so if they walk through the threshold and they see dust bunnies everywhere and a shower that's kind of gross and moldy, they're not going to be making you a top offer. So definitely if you're selling your home, think about deep cleaning it or hiring someone who can help with that. Third thing is, be sure the broker or agent you hire matches your temperament, because this is like a short-term marriage. There are more agents that have become realtors now than have ever been there before. The National Association of Realtors has the highest membership levels. There are so many people who are trying to be real estate agents right now because the market is so hot that there are plenty for you to choose from. So don't feel like you have to hire the first, you know, broker or agent you stumble over. Really interview the agent. Take your time to do that so you understand and get a good match. And then finally, the home selling timeline, right? If you want to sell quickly, be competitive with your price. If you don't care about it or you think the market can support it, you can price it a bit higher. But if you want to move fast on the buy side, you're going to need to move fast on the sell side. Be aware of what the timelines really are for your specific neighborhood and visit as many open houses as you can. Be part of the 90 million showings that Michael Lane of Showing Time talked about earlier in the show. Get out there, take a look and see what your competition looks like. And that way you'll understand what you need to do with your house before you actually go out and start and list it. So those are some of the things for buyers and sellers. If you sign up for my newsletter, Love Money and Real Estate, or just go to thinklink.com, you'll see a few others as well, along with real estate trends that we are seeing. There's just so much going on right now that it's a little bit hard to keep it all in check, but you'll definitely want to do that. So you can go to thinklink.com for that. All right, we've got Jim Dalkey coming up. He's senior editor at Chicago Inno, chicagoinno.com, with all the latest tech news. The markets are on a tear. The Dow is right at 252. S&P 500 is up a little over 1%, and NASDAQ is up 1.25%, up almost 200 points today. The markets look like they're having a very good day, and we're going to hear all about that coming up next. Hey, welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Klink. We are trying to get Jim Dalkey on the phone from Chicago Inno. He is, going to be with us right now in just a moment or two. In the meantime, I thought we would just talk for a moment about the personal finance resolutions that people are making. It is just, one of those things that I think everybody says at the beginning of the year, that they are going to do things, right? You're going to make changes. You're going to, eat less, right? You're going to go on a diet. And from when it comes to money, I find that a lot of people say the same thing. They use the same language that they're going to use for, say, food dieting for money dieting. I want to skinny down my spending. I want to spend less. I want to, build up my I want to build up my portfolio. I want to, you know, change the way that I think about money. And I'm all for that. But like with dieting, it's really hard to stick to something that is super, super tough, right? I mean, people who go from eating, let's say, 2,000 calories a day, and then they're going to eat like 1,000 calories a day. That's really hard to stick with that. And the same thing is true when it comes to spending, right? It's one thing to say you're going to spend 10 or 20% less and take that money and you're going to save it. And there are lots of different ways to do that that are more or less painful, right? But it's another thing if you say, I'm not spending any money at all. And the only example that I've seen where that actually has worked was this year with COVID, where people were, you know, able to just, because they couldn't go out and do things, they did spend a significant amount less than they've ever spent before. And I saw that even in our own household. I wasn't necessarily trying to save more money. It was just that there weren't things to spend on. But now there are, and the world has opened up more, and we're out doing things. And I think it's harder to have that same sort of hunker down mentality, even if it was really good for your wallet last year. It's less, we're all moving back into a more normal environment, and we all want to move back into that normal environment. I know that I do. And so I think about how, you know, people are spending and how they're saving. And I'd love to have you text me some of the things that you're doing. If you're thinking about spending less, I know there were some people who texted in last hour when I was asking for best or worst Christmas gifts that you got, and almost, I would say the majority of people who texted in said that it wasn't about spending money for them. It was about spending time with people. And I think we got that whole emotional gift thing happening, which, you know, again, giving a gift of time is just an incredible gift. Just doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It just, you know, it's just what it is. So when people are thinking about their money in 2022, I really want you to think about experiences. I want you to think about, you know, what you need to do to engage. And I want you to think about how you can maybe trim that from maybe 5%, 10%, 20%. Just take a little bit, something, some bite that seems reasonable. Jim Dahlke of Chicago Inno joins us now with the latest tech news. Hey, Jim, I'm so glad you're with us today. Happy New Year.
Hey, Elise, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Jim, every week you talk with John about sort of startups and what's going on. When you look back over the year, I know Chicago Inno looked at some of the biggest purchases and transactions this year. There were a lot of companies that got bought for a lot of money in Chicago. We had on a Showing Time, which Zillow bought for almost $1 billion this year, Chicago company grown up. What are some of the other big things that you saw going on this year?
Yeah, you know, it's been quite a year in Chicago. You know, certainly on the venture capital side, we've talked about a lot of money raised. But yeah, as you mentioned, the mergers and acquisitions were certainly on fire as well. Showing Time, a big one that you mentioned, $500 million to Zillow, big deal in Chicago. But yeah, there were several others really marked by the Grubhub deal. So that went official earlier this year. Chicago's homegrown food delivery company Grubhub acquired by Netherlands-based JustEatTakeaway.com in a $7.3 billion deal. It created the largest food delivery company outside of China. That deal really kind of changing the food delivery landscape, but, you know, across the world. And, you know, of course, Grubhub, you know, one of Chicago's homegrown tech success stories. So a huge deal there in Grubhub finally getting approved this year. And, you know, some other ones that, you know, really caught our eye were, you know, one was Tasty Trade, a Chicago fintech company that sold for $1 billion to IG Group back in January. That was, you know, a really milestone exit for Chicago, you know, homegrown financial tech company, but it was also a, you know, really big exit for a female founded company. Christy Ross co-founded that company in 2011. And, you know, the number of venture-backed companies led by a woman that have sold for $1 billion or more is few and far between. So that was a real milestone deal for Chicago and for female founders. And, you know, another big one that happened in Chicago was Tock, the local restaurant reservation startup from Alinea co-founder Nick Kokonis. Yeah, that was a company acquired by Squarespace in March for $400 million. Tock was really, you know, one of the biggest COVID stories, I think, over the last couple of years. They've created an app that is similar to OpenTable. It lets you hold a table at a restaurant, but they take a bit of a different approach. They make diners put down a deposit in order to hold a table, and this really cuts down on no-shows, and restaurants have really gravitated towards it. But you know, of course, like many businesses in the restaurant sector, we're just totally hit during COVID. Talk experienced its own struggles, and it actually launched a completely new service called Talk to Go, which let restaurants offer pickup and delivery services that previously weren't able to do so. And you know, that helped Talk survive. It also helped a lot of restaurants survive. And that quick pivot really caught the eye of Squarespace, and to the tune of $400 million.
Yeah, it's just amazing how, many of these big Chicago companies are selling for very serious dollars. We know that Chicago is a big, really attracts and has a very strong tech world now. And some of those were just raising more money. We just have a minute left, but a couple of startups that raised millions this year, want to run down a couple of your favorite deals?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there was one that just happened this week, a medical device startup called Rayos. It's a business from John Rogers, who folks in town may know, really is kind of one of the most prolific inventors in town. He's a professor at Northwestern University, and he's the director of the school's Institute for Bioelectronics. And Rayos is created a wearable skin patch that helps sufferers from hydrocephalus, and it's a really interesting device that goes above the skin, so it does not need to be surgically implanted. Really could be a game changer for folks suffering from that, and just raised $2.2 million today. John Rogers, of course, is former MacArthur Genius Grant recipient and has, pretty much run the gamut in terms of inventor awards that he's got there, and so his next venture, I think, has got a really big play here in the medical device space.
It's really amazing. Jim, thank you so much for being with us. Jim Dahlke is senior editor of Chicago Inno. You can find out more at chicagoinno.com. Want to wish you a very happy new year.
Likewise. Thanks, Elise.
Talk to you soon. All right, it's 12:41. Here's Dave Schwann with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Good news regarding holiday sales. MasterCard Spending Pulse reports holiday sales up 8.5% from a year earlier. Clothing led the trend, followed by jewelry and electronics. Department stores saw a 21% increase over last year. In all, it was the fastest holiday rise in 17 years. More good news. Chicago gas prices have dropped 7 cents a gallon in the past week. Gas Buddy reports the average price of unleaded regular stands at $3.47, 18.5 cents lower than a month ago, a dollar higher than a year ago. Golf-related entertainment company Drive Shack is bringing its puttery concept to Chicago's Fulton Market. It'll feature 9-hole putting courses, several bars, and a chef-driven menu spread out over 23,000 square feet. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Thanks, Dave. Well, let's do a check of traffic and business markets. Ryan?
Yeah, this report is sponsored by Indeed. When you're trying to find quality candidates, all the searching, screening, and interviews can become a job itself. You need Indeed, all-in-one platform that makes it easy to interview, screen, and hire quality people. Visit Indeed.com/credit. On your roadways right now, Route 53, an accident reported at Algonquin Road on the northbound side. The Kennedy stop-and-go traffic inbound between Ontario and the Byrne Interchange. Solid traffic right now on the Dan Ryan inbound between the Stevenson and the Byrne Interchange. On the Tri-State, heavy traffic on the exit ramp to the outbound side of the Eisenhower. I-80 road construction blocking the right lane eastbound just before I-55. We also have an accident on I-80 westbound at Chicago Street. I'm Ryan Burrow, WGN Traffic Central.
Thank you, Ryan. Let's check business markets. What's going on out there?
In the green right now, Dow is up about 0.75%, 255 points, 36,205. The S&P 500 up about 1.1%, 54 points, at 47.79, the NASDAQ's up about 1.2%, 190 points at 15,843.
Thanks so much. And the agri markets, let's check with Mark Maxwell.
Researchers now see new potential in harvesting the same tall grass farmers often use as a bed for turkeys to convert into fuel.
We are all about producing biofuels.
Dr. Vijay Singh is an expert in agricultural engineering. This lab squeezes the crop for its oils and sugars. The plant is called miscanthus, or silver grass, but experts see it as more of a gold mine.
So miscanthus is a great bioenergy crop mainly because it takes sunlight energy and turns it into a lot of stored chemical energy.
Emily Heaton is a crop scientist. She describes the versatile grass as durable and sustainable.
So we only plant it once, and then it grows like this year after year for up to 20 years.
20 years from now, the Biden administration wants the U.S. largely weaned off of burning fossil fuels.
What we want to do is make sure that it does not pollute the atmosphere.
That's one reason Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm arrived at the Energy Farm on a hydrogen-powered bus to highlight research funded in part by the infrastructure bill.
Whether it's miscanthus that they are growing on the farm that's adjacent to the university, whether it is ethanol that is produced from that or from sugarcane, we know that the Midwest will provide solutions to cleaning up our transportation system as well as to heating and cooling our homes and industry.
The Energy Farm already uses this grass to power a boiler that heats its own buildings. And before long,
it will be in vehicles.
Experts hope the markets catch on.
The potential for producing that biofuel for U.S. is enormous.
But bioenergy expert Dr. Andrew Leakey says the fuels of the future need government funding now so this crop can take root and eventually compete with cheaper, dirtier fuels.
Right now, it's more expensive, which is why we're funded by the Department of Energy to try to make those science discoveries that make it profitable and bring the cost down.
With the business of food, I'm Mark Maxwell for WGN.
Thanks, Mark. It's 12:48. I'm Elise Gling, sitting in for John Williams. WGN radio reporter Amy Guth joins us now. There is so much news going on out there, Amy. Where would you like to start?
Hey, Elise. Yeah, where do we start today? Usually it's a very quiet time for news this time of year, but that is just not the case for the last couple of years anyway, but certainly not the case today. So I think one thing on a lot of people's minds, and certainly I don't think you can go on social media too far without seeing someone mentioning this, is what's happening at airports. There have been a lot of flight cancellations over the weekend. We saw this. We saw they've continued today, another couple thousand today. You know, a lot of that is about flights that were either bound outside of the U.S. or inbound to the U.S., where there's a lot of quickly changing international situations and quickly changing travel restrictions, things like that. It's very hard to kind of keep all that information straight if you're traveling internationally. So that's part of it. But a lot of those are domestic flights. So I'm sure there were some really tough, you know, frantic phone calls to end destinations when flights were delayed and canceled and things like that. What we have to go on is what a lot of airline spokespeople are saying. And a lot of them are attributing that to an uptick in Omicron COVID cases from flight crews. You know, other things we have to think about anytime we're looking at large cancellations, you have to look at where that particular airline, where their hubs are, not only where they're based, but where their big hubs are. So when we're talking about United, of course, they're based here, but also they have a big hub in Denver. And of course, in Texas, DFW and Houston, big markets there. Delta based in Atlanta, you know, we have to kind of look where are the flights based. JetBlue in New York City, you know, Americans also in DFW. Alaska Airlines has seen a lot of trouble. Mostly for them, it's about weather, this unprecedented weather front that's hit the Pacific Northwest, because that's where they're based and that's where their biggest flight schedule is. But another thing I think is important to keep track of here when we're talking about cancellations, in addition to weather and hubs and things like that, you also have to bear in mind that a lot of airlines ramped up their holiday schedules pretty significantly ahead of holiday travel, right? So some of this could just be, you know, the staffing issues related to doing that because they had cut their flights back so much. A lot of them were still only flying kind of a fraction of what they were doing in 2019 pre-pandemic. So this is a quick ramp up. Suddenly a lot of people traveling that haven't traveled in a long time. You know, TSA was talking about the millions of people that they had seen pass through TSA checkpoints. It's a pretty high number for, you know, especially when we haven't seen that much travel over the last couple of years. We've seen it kind of ebb and flow based on COVID numbers. Suddenly a lot of people hitting the travel, hitting airlines, things like that. We continue to see a big mess today. There's still a lot of flights delayed and canceled even into today. And they expect it might take a couple of days to kind of unscramble all that.
Here's the question that I have, which is, you know, first of all, American and Southwest got slammed for canceling, I think it was thousands of flights over the, you know, over the Thanksgiving holiday season. And they have almost no cancellations when you look at the big grand scheme of things right now, whereas Delta and United, I think, have kind of been at the center of it. And it makes you wonder, you know, at the time, American Southwest said it wasn't really Omicron. That hadn't started yet. And they were saying, no, it's just that we have mismatched demand and staffing and people are out or whatever it was. But now it seems like Omicron is catching up with everybody. You know, any thoughts there on, you know, why or how that all
What should we make of it?
I don't know, going forward?
Right. I mean, I always have that same question, too. Anytime you see a large, even just a large weather event, I'm always curious to see how different airlines handle it because they all operate so differently. United operates pretty differently, and they have operated very differently during the pandemic. They made a deal with the pilots union really early saying, hey, we're going to hold your jobs. Your jobs are going to be okay. And then, you know, a lot of other airlines said we were going to have to do some furloughs. You know, United kind of approached it a little bit differently. So I'm always interested, even if it's just bad weather, I'm always interested how that impacts different airlines because of how differently their systems work, how their staffing works. I think you're onto something. I mean, this is just kind of me speculating here, but I think a lot of it has to do with COVID numbers catching up with flight crews, but also with how the different airlines approached cutting back their flight numbers and scaling down to preserve revenue, and then how quickly they ramped up. I think that's probably a lot of it too. But we also saw some airlines asking the CDC to have the quarantine timeline for vaccinated staff members that were testing positive. So now it's 10 days and they were asking ahead of this, hey, we're going to be in some trouble here with staffing numbers if you don't cut that down to 5. And we didn't see that move happen. So that tells me that perhaps there was already some trepidation or some concern walking into the holiday weekend of, hey, if we start seeing these numbers, we're going to be in big trouble if we don't get people back in 5 days instead of 10.
Yeah, that's a good point. Nobody has been talking about 5 days. It's 7 days for people who are in, you know, first responders. I don't think airline people qualify for that. And then I also saw a news report that the airlines were making noise about just not having people wear masks on board anymore. I think there's just been so much hostility towards fellow passengers, but more importantly, towards flight attendants who say, you know, wear your mask properly and put it on, and then they get punched. I think they're trying to calm that down, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've even seen some groups having flight attendants train in self-defense because there have been so many incidents.
It's crazy.
You know, usually in a year, I've been really fascinated to follow this storyline. Usually in a year, it's about 100 to 150 incidents on flights escalate to the level where you need to report it to the FAA. We've seen, I mean, it topped 4,200 a couple of months ago. And if you go to the FAA website, you can see the details of some of them. And, you know, we kind of use the term unruly passengers, but some of them are really quite serious assaults and some really quite serious things. A lot of them reportedly started with, hey, you know, sir, ma'am, whatever, put your mask on. And a lot of them started with like a mask refusal, something like that. Not all of them, but a lot of them did. And I think, you know, I think people are tired. I think there's a lot of stress. I think there's
They're
a lot
cranky.
Of uncertainty. Yeah, people are not good at, human beings are not good at uncertainty. And I think, you know, we're a culture that wants to Google it and have our answer right now. Heck, we want our groceries delivered in 30 minutes. We want everything right now. And so to have uncertainty looming, I think is really, really, really taking a toll on a lot of people's mental health, for sure.
Yeah, it has. Well, we just have a minute left. Quickly, the Consumer Electronics Show. I honestly don't know how they're going to be able to go on. They keep losing their major exhibitors. Microsoft said that they're going to only appear virtually. I'm not even sure what that means. We're all going to have to wear headsets. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching this very carefully because the Consumer Electronics Show is such a huge event. It really kind of sets the tone for the year. And I mean, it really answers a lot of questions of what are these big tech companies working on? And they're set to start on January 5th, going through January the 8th in Las Vegas. And so many huge companies have canceled. Microsoft, as you mentioned, is one of the most recent. T-Mobile, their CEO, was going to give the keynote. They've scaled back. A lot of them are still going to do a virtual presentation, like a press kind of a conference, kind of like that. They're going to do that. It's going to be streamed on the, on like on the social channels for CES, things like that. They claim that even more people have signed on, although these big tech companies have dropped out. I haven't seen a list of what new. They said 60 new companies have signed in, so they haven't dropped down the physical footprint of the tech show. I too have that question. I'm not sure how it's going to work exactly. It seems like with these big companies dropping out, it's going to be really kind of a tricky thing to pull off. But I think a lot of eyes are on what are events now? What is hybrid mean? And how does that manifest and how is that going to work? And so this is potentially an opportunity for CES to still make the show go on with using some of that technology to get people to reach people who are not in the physical space.
Well, we'll have to see how the show goes on. Amy, I want to wish you a happy new year.
Thank you. You too.
It's so nice to always get a chance to chat and catch up when I fill in for John. WGN radio reporter Amy Guth knows it all. I'm so glad you were here with us today. Happy holidays.
Thanks so much. You too, Elise.
All right. For those who are asking how they can find out where their airline is and whether there's going to be delays or cancellations, you can go to flychicago.com and put in whether it's O'Hare or Midway. You can put in your own flight information. It'll tell you whether that flight has been canceled or is delayed. Flychicago.com.